The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DK Network. It's a numbers game. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, my good man. How are you? How are you doing today?
Well, you know, physically, ailment, you know, I don't know.
What's funny
the
is...
The Ebola is getting worse.
What's funny is it's just like yesterday where you're sounding pretty good right now.
Right.
Let's give it a few seconds.
Wait an hour and a half. See what happens. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll power through this. A lot of NBA this morning. My friend Kelly Bidlin has his NBA season-long plays. Drew Dinsick has season-long plays. Dan Bespris has season-long plays. So a lot of baloncesto today on the show. That's Spanish, by the way.
Let's get it.
And of course, we will talk other things as well. Pete Futak on college football. We'll do that. We got to start with what happened yesterday, both in baseball and in the National Football League. First in baseball, the day started with the Diamondbacks beating the Phillies. Three runs in the second put the Diamondbacks ahead, and they kept that lead the rest of the way as we got bad Aaron Nola yesterday and good Merrill Kelly. And the Diamondbacks force Game 7 tonight in the National League Championship Series in Philly, where it's going to be Ranger Suarez going up against Brandon Pfaadt. But you know how this works now. Short leashes for everybody, a whole bunch of pitching changes probably. And Phillies are minus 165 favorites. Feels a little high. I want no part of this game whatsoever. None whatsoever.
Oh,
don't
really?
Want to touch it. Don't want to touch it. Philly's a little too high. Not racing about the Diamondbacks. If we end up with, and we'll get to the
Texas. Wow, I guess I was surprising a Phillies bet for. I guess I was expecting a Phillies bet from you.
Not at minus 165. I don't want to. But hey, it's interesting because, and obviously the other game yesterday, which killed my exacta. Killed my Phillies over Astros exacta. By the way, congratulations to all of you who had the Rangers to win the American League pennant or have the Rangers in an exacta. Nothing but a tip of the cap to the Texas Rangers who get it done, who I had pre-flop. It was my only season win total of the year. I went over
That's
on them.
Right. That's right.
But I did not bet them to win the division pennant or World Series. And they crush, and I do mean crush, the Astros last night, 11-4. They got three runs in the first. Did the Rangers off Christian Javier, who I shouldn't have trusted him. He only lasted a third of an inning, as I kept saying, in Javier we trust. That didn't work out. Astros got it within two runs a couple times, and then a four-run fourth for the Rangers blew it open. Again, 11-4, the final. And the Rangers, the Texas Rangers, for only the third time in their 52-year history, make it to the World Series. The previous two times, 2010, when they lost to the Bruce Bochy-managed Giants in 2010, and in 2011, which I would argue is the greatest ending to a World Series, at least one of the great games in World Series history that has somehow been lost in history, Game 6, where the Rangers were up 3-2. They came within one strike of winning the World Series, both in the 9th and 10th innings of that game, took a 2-run lead into the 9th. The ball from David Freese that he hit that went over Nelson Cruz's head that ended up tying the game in the 9th. They came back from they overcame a Josh Hamilton 2-run homer in the 10th and eventually win it in the 11th on another David Freese home run. We'll see you tomorrow night, Jack Buck said in tribute to his dad, Joe Buck, who once did back in the day with the Twins and Braves World Series. And then the Cardinals ended up winning in 7. Congratulations again to all of you who have the Rangers either in an exact in the World Series or to win the American League pennant. They deserve it. And this has nothing to do with sports betting, but I want to bring this up because Joe Pita sent this to me last night. He knows my affection for the great Joe Jackson Gibbs in football as my North Star of the greatest head coach of all time. But he said, he asked me last night, he goes, has Bruce Douglas Bochy supplanted Joe Jackson Gibbs now as the best coach slash manager of your life in professional sports, given the body of work in the context of the quality of the squad? It's a great question. I don't know that I have an answer. Bochy now in his 5th World Series. He lost in 1998, got swept by the Yankees as the manager of the Padres. That was a team that wasn't really all that great. Kevin Brown, I think, was their ace. Andy Ashby was in that starting rotation, but they had, Tony Gwynn, Greg Vaughn, I think, hit 50 homers that year. Ken Caminiti wasn't like this great team, but he got them to the World Series in 98. Again, they got swept. And then, obviously, the 3 years with the Giants, 2010, 2012, and 2014. 2010, that Giants team wasn't very good that ended up winning the World Series. That was an Aubrey Huff, Pat Burrell, you know, Juan Uribe kind of team that got to the promised land in 2010. 2012 and 2014 were better. The relievers held over. And then you had the additions of Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford and, of course, Hunter Pence and the like. But you ask yourself, so Bochy getting, you know, those 1998 and 2010 teams to the World Series, the 2010 team wins it. This team, which was the most schizophrenic, this Texas Rangers team, the most schizophrenic team in baseball this year, Bochy even said it, this is the most up and down year ever, that he gets them to the World Series, and they will have home field advantage no matter who they play after tonight, either the Phillies by tiebreaker or the Diamondbacks by virtue of a better record. Is that better than the Gibbs four teams that he got to the Super Bowl, three of which he won? 82, a strike year where the defense wasn't all that good. 83, the second best of the four, because 91's the greatest team of all time. And then 87, which was kind of somewhere in between. It's a great question. Two, I would argue the best head coach and the best manager in our lifetime. So tribute to Bruce Bochy. I wish I had played the Bochy angle beyond just the season win total over. But yeah, good on the Rangers.
Couple people. I know. No, JVT's got a ticket on them. I think 20-1
to win the World Series.
Win the World Series. Oh, yeah.
Did he have an AL pennant on him?
I don't know. I'm not sure. So maybe congratulations. Maybe good luck with the 20-1 in the World Series.
Absolutely. I'm struggling. By the way, let me just say this: if the Diamondbacks win tonight, and we have a Rangers Diamondbacks World Series, what do you think? I'm going to set the total viewership of game one. I'm going to set the over under at 8 million people.
Okay. Well, like this is the, do you know what the average viewership is for a World Series game?
For a game one?
Yeah.
Yes. In recent times, about somewhere in between 11 and 12 million.
Yeah, I think you're probably right on.
So I'm going to say 8.
I mean, but let's put it this way. If you're Major League Baseball and you're looking at these four teams in the LCS, you're like, we're good here. We're not good. We're great here. Yeah. As long as the Diamondbacks don't make it in.
I mean, look, the Rangers should be the Rangers will be the favorite. I don't know. I won't say that. No, because the Phillies win tonight. The Phillies will be the Rangers will have home field, but home field didn't serve them in this ALCS. So it's a crapshoot from here. The whole thing's been a crapshoot. Just I want to update that one postseason stat. The team that leads after the fourth inning in this postseason, there's been 35 games. The team that has led after the fourth inning in this postseason in 35 games, you know what their record is? 32-3.
It's crazy.
30 wins, 2 losses, 3 pushes, because there were 3 ties after the fourth inning.
Okay. There was one.
It's just unbelievable.
Was there one recent?
There's a couple ties recently.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The only two.
I remember when you first brought that up last week, I was blown away.
It's an incredible stat. Yeah. The only two losses, because we're not talking again about the sixth or the seventh inning. We're talking about the fourth inning. It's over. The only two teams that overcame fourth run deficits ultimately was that Atlanta win, the one time they beat the Phillies, that 5-4 miraculous win. And then there was a Diamondbacks Brewers game in the wild card round.
See, this is why, like, people like me don't need to hear this. You know what I mean? Because it's the, when you first brought that up, I was blown away.
It kept going.
And then it gets in your head, right? Because then you're like, well, fifth inning, 3-0 lead. I'm going to do something else. Like, see you later.
32-3. It's amazing. Football last night. The 49ers not only don't cover against the Minnesota Vikings.
You like that?
They lose outright. Kirk Cousins, after the game, said to Todd Wishnev, "Hey, Todd, you like that?" Todd Wishnev had an anti-Kirk Cousins rant on the Megapod this past
really?
Week. Oh, yeah. Good on the Vikings. They win it 22-17. A lot of people are going crazy on Brock Purdy because Brock Purdy did throw 2 picks in the final 2 drives of that game last night. But the loss was hardly his fault. I mean, the Niners defense could not get the Vikings off the field. 452 total yards for the Vikings. 8 of 13 on third downs. Kirk Cousins threw for 378. Jordan Addison, 7 for 123 and 2 touchdowns. The big play of the game at the very end of the first half I mean, this was just unbelievable. Third and six at the Minnesota 40 with 16 seconds to go. The Vikings don't have any timeouts left. They're up 10-7. Cousins to Addison, who previously had lost a tug of war for the football with Charvarius Ward earlier in the game. This time, Addison rips it out of Ward's hands. Ward falls, doesn't tackle him. Addison to the hizzy. And there's your 9-point lead. The PAT was missed, but that was a startling development right at the end of the first half.
I don't think I've ever seen that in a game, though, where that's happened both.
Two guys fighting for
the and it's twice. And results happened either way both times.
In the same half.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And, hey, this is I saw Matt Brown tweet this last night. At halftime of that game, Jordan Addison had more receiving yards by halftime of that game than Quentin Johnson has in his season so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Addison ended up 7 catches for 123 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Niners only had 65 rushing yards. But, yes, Purdy did throw a pick. Cameron Bynum got him with 5:30 left in the game. Then after Greg Joseph missed the 50-yard field goal, the Niners did get the ball back down 5 with 1:11 left in the game at their own 40. They got to the Minnesota 40 with 34 left, and then Purdy was picked by Bynum again, ball game. Vikings win it 22-17. Think about how you feel about the Niners as a football team.
Mm-hmm.
Just your snapshot in your head of what they mean to you, what you think about them.
Okay.
Think about your snapshot of how you feel about the Minnesota Vikings in your head, and now reconcile that those two teams, the way you think of them, are only 2 games apart in the standings. Not that they're in the same division or anything, but one team's 5-2 and the other's 3-4.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think these games...
What a league.
It's crazy. I think when you have... When you still have a quarterback of Kirk Cousins' caliber, and I still think that he's above-average quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, for sure.
So, Todd, sorry if that's a problem for you, but I think he's above-average. And you get an offense like this, I think they can have these types of games. And San Francisco has so many injuries right now and got injured in during that game. It's tough. This is going to happen. You're going to go on the road, and it's tough to win the NFL on the road.
Yeah, Todd's a little irrational about Cousins. You could throw out anybody. He's like, he's better than Cousins. Run a passed away Sammy Ball. He's better than Cousins. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the NBA and NFL next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Kelly, we got to take a break so I can wax poetically about Zyn nicotine pouches. We're always debating what a team needs to do to get to number one. You and I debate that all the time. Mm-hmm. Hey, what does a team need to do to get to number one?
Not be the Detroit Lions.
How many times have you screamed that at me? But Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. If you're a smoker or dipper, looking to ditch the ashtray or spit cup, look no further than Zyn. Zyn's made with 6 simple ingredients and is available in a wide range of varieties, including spearmint, citrus, and even coffee. And it's available in 2 strengths so you can control your nicotine satisfaction. Because it's discreet, you can join anywhere, anytime, so you never have to miss a moment of the game. Plus, every can of Zyn earns you points towards premium items like tailgating gear, top-of-the-line tech, Zyn swag, and even gift cards. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Drew Dinsick at Whale_Capper on Twitter. Kind enough to join us from both the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge, or Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast, Bet the Edge from NBC Sports. Drew, okay, let's talk some NBA. First of all, there's a couple games tonight, obviously. We just heard Bradley Beal officially ruled out. We thought that might happen.
Not officially?
Yeah,
leaning that way.
Oh, I thought
what What did I say? Shams wasn't official.
Yes.
Oh, you faking us out now?
You made it sound official.
Unlikely
to play. Okay. Well, doubleheader tonight. Are you playing anything tonight? Do you generally dive in to individual games full bore, or do you kind of slow play it early in the season?
Oh, no. I think some of the biggest edges are in the first month for sure. And it's just a matter of if you got priors that you think are, you know, meaningfully better than the market. You can tell pretty quickly if you're right or wrong about that. And so, presumably you can get ahead of, you know, correct, you know, this goes for every sport. If you have, you know, a set of priors on a given season at the start that is, you know, is meaningfully sharper than, the market on average, you're going to have better success game by game than you are even going to be playing win totals, because it'll take 5-6 games before things really get adjusted, for any given team. And if you have any, you know, macro edges, which unfortunately I'm not seeing many or any this year, but, you know, think back a couple of years ago where they changed the rule where they were giving three foul shots to the shooter who kicks his legs out. Then they took that away. It was pretty clear. Well, this could have two effects. Number one, there will be fewer free throws in the game. And number two, you could play a little bit more aggressive defense in the perimeter. And 3-point shooting was just immediately and obviously impacted out of the gate. Totals were off by something like 6 points for the first week of the season. You could have basically blind bet unders for, you know, something like the first, I'll say, 50 games. And you hit, you know, close to 70% just because the totals were anchored with, you know, the wrong assumptions about how the game state was going to play out. And, you know, those come along pretty regularly. I have a couple in the back of my head that I'm keeping an eye on this year with the, just in general, the state of the game. It's been a weird last couple of years. And I this is another kind of just general kind of point of context. The NBA regular season data, you almost have to throw it out. The year that there was the COVID interruption, which was 1920, right? That year was incomplete. So you can't really make much of any of those kind of season long, you know, trends, wins, any of that, because they stopped the season and restarted it. Not every team even finished the season. And then they had a tiny break before they restarted the season and went, you know, well past the normal finishing point, and all the good teams were playing into July. And then there was an international, you know, there was Olympic play that impacted some teams. And then we went right into the 21-22 season. And that season was just absolutely rife with fatigue. Like the players were just exhausted. And you almost didn't even need to know, you know, what appropriate team strength was. You just needed to know which team was more rested, and you had the winning answer. And so those kind of 3 years of NBA data and seasons are all kinds of messed up. And last year was sort of the first normalish year we've had with things kind of back on a normal schedule. And then this offseason was like a complete full break for almost all of these players outside of those that participated in the international FIBA stuff. So this is now kind of a full reset sort of year. And I'm expecting some things to be a little bit more normal out of that. Expecting some, you know, the league is trying to make player availability, you know, a highlight heading into this season. And even though here we are on the eve of the start of the season and Bradley Beal is a last minute scratch, it does seem like at least the likelihood of kind of extensive just surprise scratching should go down to a degree this year.
It should, so. But the player participation stuff is only for like the big stars too, right? So like they could really still be around. Like maybe we're overrating that.
Sure, but it impacts all NBA, which is dollars for these guys, right? You know, if that's my assumption, at least, is that the fact that you have to hit the 65 game threshold in order to be considered for all NBA, you know, all NBA is your bottom line if you're a player. Like that's how you get escalators in your contract. That's how you get ultimately getting you know, life changing money.
It's still 17 games to play with, though. You know what I mean? Like there's 82.
It is. But you know, you're walking a fine line. Because if you get hurt and miss a couple weeks anyway, all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, one more night off might actually be a deal breaker. So yeah, it's a little bit to be determined, I guess. But I'm pretty willing to fire into a lot of these lines early in the season because you know I look at the win totals right now. I think the biggest differences I have are off by almost 10 wins to the good and the bad here.
Give them to us.
So I have a pretty strong disagreements with Mark and some of these. I am the biggest off to the bad with Detroit. The market's making them a 28.5 win team right now. I think they're closer to an 18.5 win team.
Wow.
I have every player in that lineup graded as a negative. I have Jaden Ivey, who they are going to have to absolutely lean on to try to develop this year because of the investment they have in him. I have him as a very minus player. And then on the flip side of that, to the good, I think, the Toronto Raptors are being wildly feel underrated heading into the season. I think the my numbers say the Timberwolves are being wildly underrated, but that also could very well be some of the parts type of problem. I have the Oklahoma City Thunder as almost 10 wins over fair. I have the Kings almost 9 wins over fair. I have the Pacers 8 wins over fair. Portland and San Antonio, I have 7 wins over fair.
Wow. Is that typical that you have that big of a difference between your projections and the actual pre-flop number?
Yeah, I mean, I think a win in season-long NBA is worth very little. So the fact that you're having medians that are, 7, 8, 9 off is not crazy at all. The residual between, season-long wins and just actual results, I think the median is in that ballpark of, 5, 6, 7. The key, I guess, for macro that I'm excited about this year is last couple of years, last year in particular, was a mega tanking year. A lot of people had incentive not to win. And now almost all of those teams, the shoe is on the other foot. And you have a lot of these teams that have been incentivized to lose for years and years and years that are, you have GMs and coaches that are, this is their last chance to finally show some winning potential. And I think there were certain teams in certain divisions and particularly schedules that lent themselves to teams being the beneficiaries of other teams tanking. And now all of a sudden they're going to have to win in a relatively neutral games, neutral playing field. The bad teams like Portland, San Antonio, Detroit, they're still not incentivized to lose. Like, they probably will lose a lot of games just because they're starting a lot of really inexperienced players. But I think, just in general, the tanking nature that we had as part of the fabric of the NBA the last couple of years is going to be a lot softer this year.
It's very interesting. All right. We have 45 seconds. So I need real quick answers from you. Do you have a play in either of the games tonight?
No, I think they're both fair. Okay. I'm looking for a second half under in the Lakers game, based on the numbers we're looking at. I'm looking at a second half over potentially in the Suns Warriors game, although that's downgraded, particularly with the absence of Beal. I have the Suns as a top three offense by clearly top three with a healthy Beal, and kind of excited to see what that team does. The only team that I have top five, both offense and defense right now, is the Celtics. If I had to have a prediction, I would say that we're going to get Nuggets over Celtics in the finals.
Okay.
That's mostly just because I think Nikola Jokic is still the best player in the NBA.
Exit question, because we got to go. For the man who gave us Mike Brown Coach of the Year last year, do you have an award play?
Yes, 45-1. Darko Rajakovic, Coach of the Year. Toronto Raptors, they beat their win total by 10 wins. They get a top 5 seed in the East. People know the household name, Darko Rajakovic, this year.
Darko Rajakovic, 45-1. Thank you, Drew. We'll talk soon. Drew did a great appearance on the Megapod this past week as well. Baseball with Paul Sporer on the other side. That's next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check them out, all of today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. I promise you, coming up this hour, nothing but a cavalcade of NBA thoughts from Kelly and Dan Bespris, as well as the NBA season tips off tonight. By the way, you see, hockey is doing that thing tonight that the NBA did.
Yeah.
They're starting every 15 minutes.
That's a really cool, really cool idea.
Remember when this happened with the NBA? So it was before Election Day in 2022, the day before Election Day, because there was going to be no games on Election Day because they wanted everybody to go out and vote. The NBA did this thing where every tip-off was 15 minutes staggered after the other for all the teams in the league.
It was awesome. I'm trying to think, right? Did they not do that again last year at some point?
Maybe. Well, that was last year. 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kelly Bidlin, everybody.
Thank God Gil's here.
thank God. God, I'm here. But the thing about that is you hope for fantastic finishes in every game. So it just goes bang, bang, bang. One doing it. So hockey's doing that tonight anyway, which I think is a great idea. Let me just read a couple of these college football tweets real quick before we get to Pete. J&J Watering Hole, what they actually called an Iowa game, this is good clarification, he said, was an illegal fair catch symbol, which isn't technically a penalty, but the ball is dead. All right. Same thing, right? But technically, he's correct. Some BS about gamesmanship in making the defense believe it might be a fair catch and slowing down. BS no matter, but worked out for me. Finn Fan Fall Holland. Tennessee was probably not going to win their game with Bama, but that officiating was atrocious, too. Another fair catch signal call that placed Tennessee on their own, too. It also appeared every third down stop resulted in a controversial call on the Tennessee defense. Yes, that was at play as well.
I also don't, like, I didn't see a lot of these, but it is, some of these players get way too lax with the fair catch hand. Sometimes it's like the... just a real quick, like, wave. Like,
right.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, right at, like, the last second.
Maybe make it a little clearer before you get drilled by three guys running down the field.
True that. I'm sure this gentleman has something to say about it from College Football News. It's the great Pete Futek. How you doing, Peter?
I'm fine. You know what? The Iowa thing was weird because for so many reasons. One, it was almost a miraculous cover, or depending on how you were going the other side of that, obviously. And yes, by the letter of the rule, they called it right. It's not like Minnesota slowed down, though. So it was like, it's like you had the problem with the, I get the Iowa fan side where it's like, yeah, he kind of did the wave, but Minnesota guys just went full bore on him. And it's not like they really backed off. It was a strange, weird play. And if you watch the game before that, there was a couple drive before, there was a really bizarre officiating call, a bad catch that was ruled okay to keep an Iowa drive alive. But that, yeah, crazy stuff at the end of that.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, Kirk Ferentz's issue was they weren't even reviewing that. They were reviewing whether he was out of bounds. And instead, while review, everything's fair game, you know?
Look, if you're going to have the greatest slow on turf and you're going to rely on miraculous this player, you have to, they rely on the miraculous every single game. If you're going to do that, your margin for error is absolutely minuscule, but that team is absolutely amazing with how they are able to do what they do. And now, you know, good luck trying to figure out the Big Ten West, because as my Big Ten West friends, why don't we, well, big deal. So we're going to go to the Big Ten Championship and get drilled. Yeah, but this is kind of your last year to do it, because next year they go to no divisions, and then, you know, Minnesota and Nebraska and all, you have good luck with that.
Felica texted in about this. You know what he said? He said, blank Iowa. They had 2 yards in the second half. So there you go. That's how he feels about it.
That's how they roll, though. That
wasn't
them usually.
My point was, it wasn't even the worst. Like, if I had to rank them, Pitt was almost worse than ASU. Like, the Pitt thing was just mind-boggling. Anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just brutal. What did we learn from Ohio State, Penn State? What's your big takeaway from that game?
Ohio State's good. I mean, they just are. I mean, it's they don't look. I saw that as more of a really awesome game of defense than bad offense. And if we're all used to the Pac-12 and conditioned for that, and as apparently so, nobody stayed awake to watch the Washington game because
I did.
The tweets that I was getting saying, well, Washington and Oregon would drill these guys. Like, no. You know, the NFL talent on that Ohio State defense and the Penn State defense is next level. So, yes, Penn State does need a downfield passing game at some point, but I do think Ohio State is just that good.
So you do think, because while you're watching that Ohio State-Penn State game, your thought is, wow, whatever the opposite of that UW-Oregon game was, is this, which is offense. But you read it as really good defenses. Let me ask you what I asked Felica last week, which is, all right, then put Michigan in that Big Ten mix. Are they that much better than both Ohio State and Penn State?
Are they stealing? I'm sorry. we're about to find out. And because Michigan still hasn't really played anybody. I mean, beating Minnesota is just not that big a deal, at least the way they did. And for all that kind of feeds into the controversy is, oh my God, they're destroying everyone. Yeah, they also, I mean, UNLV is good and all, but it's not like they've played a Notre Dame or even an Iowa or even a, you know, West Virginia like what Penn State did. But I we'll see. Well, in 2 weeks, I think Michigan's right there. And I still say I'm going my original call. We're going 2008 Big 12 South. We're going to have 3-11-1 teams in the Big Ten East when we're all said and done.
All right. We have 9 remaining undefeateds in FBS play, one of whom is playing tonight. Liberty is a 5.5-point favorite at Western Kentucky. Any thoughts on that game?
Western Kentucky played bad last week at home. That passing game has not kicked in like we thought it would, and Liberty just kind of keeps on winning. Not a great Liberty team, but bad schedule. I'm going with Liberty, but not too excited about it.
All right. What's your favorite play this weekend on a schedule that's not exactly the sexiest, may I just say?
I somehow have nailed the Pac-12. I've missed a lot of other stuff, but my overs and unders have been fine. The Pac-12, I'm at a Graham Mertz like 78%, shockingly enough, because the home teams are, these games are kind of easy to figure out because they're all these teams are sort of the same. So with in terms of like what they do at home, they all kind of rise up, and we know Colorado is bad. So if you go with all those, Pac-12 has been sort of easy to get. Utah getting 6.5 with maybe 7, depending on where you're looking, at home against Oregon. Oregon's a good team, obviously. Utah's just different at home. That is a solid team to begin with. They went on the road, obviously, last week against USC. There's nothing flashy about them, but those lines are fantastic. And again, you're giving me a touchdown with Utah at home. I'm taking Utah. The one I'm a little less excited about, Arizona at home. Rested Arizona team. They're playing some good ball. Oregon State's rock solid type, but I'm going with the 2 Pac-12 underdogs, Utah and Arizona. And I'm maybe going to kind of dabble maybe in UCLA because I just don't think Colorado is good at football.
Wow. Are you becoming like a Pac-12 specialist now? Is that your new thing?
I have to. Well, I only have like 10 minutes left to do this, don't I? I guess if I'm going to be that. So, yeah, until they go away. But I guess I am at the moment.
10 minutes left of the Pac-12 lifetime is what he's lifespan is.
I was
going to
say on the air or in the break after. First this is the most Pac-10 I've ever heard him talk about. Pac-12 I've ever heard him talk about.
I love the Pac-12 because it's night and that's a fully focused. There's not 1,000 other games going at once. So I've always been sort of a Pac-12 aficionado.
What about Louisville Duke? Louisville 4-point favorite hosting the Blue Devils.
Duke's great. I mean, they're not flashy, and Riley Leonard's playing. As long as he's fine, as long as he's able to go on that ankle, I'm going with Duke. Again, just a rock solid team that's just playing well, and they've got an NFL starting quarterback, and I'm going with Duke on this.
Okay, what's your gut instinct tell you about the 4-team playoff? Who are those 4 teams right now?
Are we assuming that Michigan's not just going to get nailed for all this? And
Yes, we are. We're going to assume that.
Yeah, because if they do, I don't think the NCAA can work that fast. I think that's a problem for next year and for Harbaugh's future. So if we're assuming that they're going to get their way in this, I'm saying 2 Big Ten teams. I am saying we're going to get both Michigan and Ohio State. We're going to have a 2-loss Big 12 team somehow. We're definitely going to have a 2-loss Pac-12 champion. I think Washington's losing twice. And Florida State's got it kind of easy. So SEC champion, going to say Georgia, even though Bama's sort of sneaking up, and watch out for Ole Miss against Georgia next week. We're going to be talking about this. But I'm going to go Georgia, 2 Big 10 teams, Michigan, Ohio State, and Florida State, with Michigan and Ohio State playing for the national championship just before the NCAA drops the hammer on the Michigan Wolverines.
I think I have those 4 teams pre-flop in the Final 4, but I think I had 2 different ones in the a different pair in the championship. Real quick, because you bring it up 50 times here, Pete, this thing with Michigan and the sign stealing, I asked 2 people. One person says, it's nothing. And the other person thinks it's the most serious thing in the world. Where do you fall on it?
I have learned over my 25 years of doing this, that every time I think someone's going to get nailed for this, like Cam Newton in 2010, no. Jameis Winston in 2013, no. And then they end up winning the national championship. So it'll be a big deal next year.
Big deal next year. All right. Threaded the needle. Pete, enjoy. Appreciate you, man.
There you go.
Pete Futak, everybody. At Pete, F-I-U-T-A-K on Twitter. Now, I don't know if you know this, Kelly. Known as X.
Yes, it is.
You're aware of that?
We all say it.
Do we?
No.
No, we don't. Coming back, Mark Borchardt on baseball and a cavalcade of NBA plays coming up. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.